Jim O'Donnell of Indianapolis worked as a repairman for an airplane manufacturer in the early 40s. But after a while, even a job that aided the war effort couldn't keep him out of the military. He'd run out of draft deferments and became a U.S. Naval officer.
I got inducted on February of 1944, and it was on Friday the 13th. And I guess I should have seen the handwriting on the wall then.
After a few weeks of training, O'Donnell was sent to California to serve in the boiler room of the USS Indianapolis. The vessel had become the flagship of the U.S. Fifth Fleet. For about 2 years, O'Donnell served on a crew of nearly 1,200 men during assaults on the Mariana Islands, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa. The ship withstood a kamikaze attack that killed 9 crew members. It also played a direct role in ending World War II without firing a shot. The Indianapolis and its crew delivered the atomic bomb to the island of Tanyan just before it was dropped on Hiroshima. A couple days later, just past midnight on July 30, 1945, somewhere between Guam and the Philippines, O'Donnell was asleep near one of the vessel's gun turrets.
I woke up and all you could see when I looked forward was a big ball of fire. I mean, you wore a little rubber life preserver at all times. And around the ship in bags, they had these Kapok life jackets. We walked over to them and got a Kapok life jackets and walked down the side of the ship, slid down the bottom of the ship into the water, swam a little ways, looked back, and all you could see was the ship going down.
The USS Indianapolis had been struck by 2 torpedoes fired from a Japanese sub. It took just 12 minutes for the ship to sink. While about 300 men died on board, nearly 900 were left floating, most of them without rafts, and no food, water, or protection from the elements below. Don McCall is an Indianapolis survivor from Champaign.
You're just absolutely petrified. You just can't believe being out there helpless, and these sharks are in the water. You see them, but you don't pay attention to them. You're trying to get away from them, you know, and there's no place to go.
A series of missteps prevented a speedy rescue mission. O'Donnell, McCall, and the others still breathing spent 5 days of despair before they were spotted on a routine naval flight. 317 men were saved, but it was weeks before anyone else found out what really happened, even military families. Mary O'Donnell is Jim's wife.
I got my telegram on August 13th, and on the 14th it came out that the Japanese had surrendered and that the war was over, and in finer print that the heavy cruiser Indianapolis had been sunk. And that's the first that I had heard, you know, of what had actually happened. My telegram said he was suffering from immersion, which I had no idea what that meant.
One of the survivors, the ship's captain, Charles McVeigh, had little time to recover from his wounds. He was court-martialed and convicted later that year of failing to zigzag or taking proper evasive action to avoid the disaster. But survivors say McVeigh was made a scapegoat to hide the mistakes of others. The conviction had not only cost the captain his seniority, but his pride. He committed suicide in 1968. And it wasn't until 30 years later that the most unlikely of sources, a young teen, led the effort to clear McVeigh's name. Hunter Scott was watching the movie Jaws on TV one day and came to a monologue delivered by Captain Quint. The character talked about being on the Indianapolis and losing shipmates in the days following the submarine attack.
And it is because of that that he dedicated the rest of his life to taking revenge on sharks because of what the sharks had done to so many of his shipmates when their ship sank and they were in the water. And so it was because of that scene right there that I stood up and asked my dad if it were a true story. He knew about as much as I did. He thought it was true, but neither of us really knew. And from that point, I went to the library and started doing research on the Indianapolis, found out it was true, and found out so much more.
Scott chose the tragedy for his National History Day project. At the age of 14, he appeared before Congress with survivors of the vessel, arguing that Captain McVeigh was innocent. Scott says President Clinton formally cleared the captain's name in 2000.
Gordon England, who was the Secretary of the Navy at that time, had someone pull Captain McVeigh's naval record, attach the legislation to it that said he was not responsible for the loss of his ship, and that essentially changed what was written in history books and had been written in history books for almost 60 years.
And it's a history that's received more attention in recent years.
You could study this ship for probably 5 years and still not know everything there is to know about it.
Ken McNamara is with the USS Indianapolis Museum and its new exhibit at the Indiana War Memorial. The gallery, which opened in July, tracks the ship's earliest days through the 1945 tragedy. In the 1930s, President Roosevelt used the vessel as his ship of state.
That's 800 pounds of brass that was removed from the ship at the beginning of World War II so they could have more ammunition and guns.
McNamara rings a bell with the ship's name and the year of its maiden voyage, 1932, inscribed in it. One end of the exhibit tracks the vessel's journey through a variety of harbors, the majority of them within U.S. borders. The other details the ship's extensive service during World War II, including the delivery of the atomic bomb. The site also holds the uniforms of a few who survived the ship's sinking and pictures of some who didn't. When 40 of the 81 remaining survivors of the USS Indianapolis returned for their biannual reunion this summer, they held a ribbon cutting to commemorate the new exhibit. Jim O'Donnell, who spent most of his life in the city, says he returns to the exhibit often.
If you stop and figure, you know, you pay a price sometimes for everything you do. Now, we took a bomb over there that ended the war, that killed thousands of people. But we paid an awful price for it. We lost a great ship, 880 men. Kind of balance things out. That's one way to look at it.
The story of what those men went through in 1945 expects to get more exposure soon. A handful of books have been written, and a Hollywood movie based on Hunter Scott's research is in the works, with its release slated for 2009. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.